This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah! Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show starts now. It is the Fan Upstate. What's happening, y'all? Happy Friday. Friday, got to get down on Friday. Everybody's working for the weekend, and most of the week off next week. Cannot wait to get there. I hope that you are just having an absolutely fantastic week. I hope that your Friday, if you are one of those people that has to do a work today, I hope that it goes smoothly and most importantly, very quickly. Joe Burrow, I enjoy giving gifts at Christmas time. It's one of my things. It's not just giving the gift, Lonzo. I enjoy nailing a gift. I enjoy hitting somebody with a gift that they go, "Oh, this is awesome." It's my favorite thing about Christmas, man. Like, you, when you say, "I know you, I thought about you, and here's a wonderful gift." Joe Burrow nailed the gift. Now, there's some quarterbacks that are out there that are, you know, gifting their offensive linemen, Toyota trucks and stuff like that. And that's fine. Like, every dude would take a truck, right?
Well, I mean, you need to mention that was the majority of someone's salary who did that. So,
I'm
guessing he probably got a little discount buying that many.
Sure, yeah. My dude caught a little discount. Joe Burrow stuck the gift-giving landing. According to Paul Denner Jr., who covers the NFL for The Athletic, Joe Burrow gifted his offensive linemen a group of artisan-made authentic Japanese katanas. They are all unique. Each sword comes with its own story from certain towns or battles. He put them all in a room and allowed the offensive lineman to pick out the one that best represented them. Left tackle Orlando Brown, who is still in the NFL, I just learned today, said, quote, "Joe does a great job at buying gifts that are extremely meaningful. The fact that he bought me a sword, it's the most ancient form of respect." What a go, Joey B. He said, "I'm going to get myself." Now, I will say this. If I'm an offensive lineman, I'm probably like, I'd have taken one of them Batmobiles, though. You know what I mean? Like, cool sword, bro. I'm hanging it on the wall right over the mantle. But, Joey B, I'd have taken one of those Batmobiles you bought for sure.
I don't know. Sword's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I don't.
I mean, who doesn't want a katana? If you've watched any kung fu movie or Ninja Turtles, you want a katana.
As the owner of, like, five swords. I have a broadsword. I have a claymore. I have a rapier. Maybe I only have three now. I lost a couple when I moved.
I'm guessing a machete doesn't count as a sword, but I do have this sword.
That's the sword. Is that the sword? I feel like that's the sword.
It also, if you push a button, it puts the Thundercat symbol up on the
wall.
I'm
mad about that.
It's really cool.
I get it. And I got to tell you, good on Joy B. Props on Joy B. That's a pretty dope gift. Pretty dope gift. All right, it is 7 o'clock in the morning. You are on your way to work. Or perhaps, if you're one of the lucky few, you're not. Either way, ladies and gentlemen, you are going to be talking about sports at some point today. Either because it is Friday, got to get down on Friday. and you are waiting for the weekend, so you're just going to be fighting through it. What better way to kill some time at the office and talking some sports? Or maybe you're off today. Maybe today's a you day. Maybe today is one of those nice mental health and relaxation days. Well, what else are you going to do? Then talk sports. Either way, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you got to know what's going on in the world of sports, ladies and gentlemen, you need this. Yeah! Yeah! It's the water cooler cheat sheet. It's the water cooler cheat sheet. Water cooler. It's the water cooler cheat sheet. Yeah.
So I pushed the wrong button. I would say fire me, but I don't want that to happen. You know, it's Christmas. I don't want. I mean, you know, at least wait till we get back.
It's right. Christmas time. You can't do that. Can't do that. Water cooler cheat sheet, top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office today. Yeah. Item number one. Little Thursday night football action last night, 27-34, your final as the Los Angeles Chargers improve to 9-6 with a win over the Denver Broncos last night. It bumps the Chargers into a pretty good playoff position. The Broncos are still in a decent spot, though it may have gotten just a little bit more difficult out there in the AFC West as these two teams are now tied, but the Chargers do hold the tiebreaker. Here's why it is interesting. The Steelers are going to win, likely, though not definitely. We'll find out. The AFC North, if they don't, it'll be because the Ravens, who are a game back, sneak up and steal it from them. Those two teams, 10-4, 9-5, respectively. The Bills have already won the AFC East. They are in a competition with the Kansas City Chiefs for the one seed. The Chiefs are up two games, but the Bills have the tiebreaker, meaning if Kansas City drops two of the last three and Buffalo wins out, they would end up getting the one seed. It's likely going to Kansas City, though it is not over. The wild card spots, though, this is where it's interesting. Nobody out of the East is going to get a wild card spot. The Ravens out of the West or the Steelers, one of those two teams likely will. Nobody out of the AFC South is going to get a wild card spot, meaning there are three spots to split up between the Ravens or Steelers, whoever does not win that division, and the Chargers and the Broncos, both of whom are 9-6. So they're still both in a spot that they could get there, but the board is open, very open.
I believe they played each other last night, which would make the Chargers 10 wins?
No, they're 9-6 after last night.
Maybe I looked at it wrong. I thought they had 10 wins.
The Chargers, as it stands right now, are 9-6, second in the AFC West after that win last night. They have two games left to play. They have the Patriots and the Raiders. The Denver Broncos after last night are 9-6. They have two games left to play at Cincinnati and then back home against Kansas City. Again, there are effectively in the AFC three wild card teams right now. The loser of the race between the Steelers and the Ravens for the AFC North, the Chargers and the Broncos. Now, there is a way, although it's unlikely, it would require the Broncos to lose out or the Chargers to lose out, and it would require the Colts to win out or the Bengals to win out or the Dolphins to win out. If any of those teams take an L this weekend, one of those spots is going to one of the teams with 9 wins. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. But there was a little bit more to that game because last night we had a little bit of history getting made.
We did made history tonight. That is Dicker the Kicker, Eric Dicker, who knocked through for the first time in 48 years a fair catch free kick. There was a punt as time was ending. The punt catch was interfered with. A 15-yard personal foul stuck onto the end. That brought the ensuing play out to around the 48-yard line going in. Well, in the NFL, there is a rule that is very, very rarely used, that if a fair catch is interfered with, you have an option. You can actually kick from that spot a free kick, meaning you can put it on the tee and hold it just like a regular kickoff. A free kick that, if it goes through the uprights, would be 3 points. The Chargers elected to go ahead and make that decision. And Dicker the Kicker, big Dicker energy from way long 58 away, puts it dead center through. And our first fair catch free kick in 48 years goes on the board.
See, here's the thing, though. If you watched it, I was watching it live, and the announcers were saying, do they know they get a free kick? And they delayed the game for longer than I think they should have been able to explain it to Harbaugh. It was pretty cool that they did, because you get to see history. But you could see them on the sidelines explaining to him, because he didn't know. Because it's, no offense to him, but it's a really, really old rule. And since it hadn't happened in that many years,
yeah,
he didn't know. You could tell he didn't know.
Yeah, and for the record, I don't think most people did. I think last night was kind of one of those nights where we ended and went, oh, we learned, so we all learned something new today.
Explain a free kick, though, to people who don't know what that is.
Free kick, much like after a safety, you can kick it however you want to. You know, after a safety, most guys would like to go with a punt. Why? Punt's safe, right? It's way high up in the air. It's booming. You give time for your guys to get down there and cover it up, whatever. But you can also put the ball on a tee and kick it just like a regular kickoff. It is a free kick. You can kick it however you want. Well, in this opportunity, it gave Dicker the Kicker the opportunity for a 58-yard field goal. No rush. You can obviously put it up on a tee. You don't have to worry about a kicker, a long snapper getting the snap back to a holder getting the snap, getting it down, getting the finger on it, spinning it so the laces are out, Marino. You just put it up and you kick it. And Dicker took advantage of that, knocked it through. A little history made in the NFL last night. Let's get to item number two. LeBron James has passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Earlier in the year, he did it for the most points scored on the all-time NBA list. Last night, he passed him for another milestone. The 22-year veteran and oldest active player in the league last night became the number one all-time minutes played NBA record holder. At the conclusion of last night, he logged 34 minutes. That brings his career total to 57,471 minutes of action. 57,471, which, if you divide it, means that LeBron James has played 957.85 hours of basketball. If you break that into days, Lonzo, LeBron James has played 39.91 full days of basketball just in the NBA alone. After last night, LeBron James, after 22 years, supplants Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most minutes played in the history of the NBA. The LA Lakers did knock off the Kings last night, 113-110, en route to that LeBron James milestone. And very quickly, item number three. You know how I know you're going to talk about it? I know you're going to talk about it because we have been talking about it all morning, and we will continue talking about it all morning. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first 12-team NCAA college football playoffs. They begin this evening, 8 p.m., when the Indiana Hoosiers travel up interstate number it is to South Bend, Indiana, as Kurt Cignetti and the Hoosiers take on Marcus Freeman in the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Somebody's national championship dreams die on a field in Indiana tonight. And then tomorrow we start at noon o'clock when the SMU Mustangs travel up to Happy Valley to square up and off with the Nittany Lions. Somebody's dreams of a natty die in Happy Valley tomorrow. Then, just hours later, off we go to Austin, Texas. The big boots of the Longhorns taking on Dabo Swinney and his Tigers. Somebody's natty dreams die in the Texas heat of December. Then, just a few hours after that, we wrap up round one in Columbus, Ohio. The horseshoe will be full of scarlet and gray, but it's going to have a pretty good representation of checkerboard orange and white because Neyland's Navy takes to the interstate. They head up to Columbus as the Tennessee Volunteers get ready to do battle with Lonzo's Ohio State Buckeyes, and somebody's national championship dreams die at the 50-yard line. Will a flag be planted, or will the Buckeyes bounce into round number two? It is time, ladies and gentlemen, and we will continue talking college football playoffs as the show rolls on. I am Rob Brown, the great one Lonzo on the ones and twos. We are talking playoffs today on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It's the Fan of State. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob, the great one, Alonzo, with you. We've got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about on the radio program today. Continuing to talk about the college football playoffs. We'll get some NFL later on in the show. For those of you that are tuning in for a little professional football discussion, I promise you, we will get to that later on. But I think college football is the way to go right now. I asked you guys earlier in the show, and again, what your thoughts, shoot them in on the text line, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N, and we will read them on the radio broadcast. Which of the four first-round college playoff games is most and least likely going to be an upset? I have given you the order of predicted upsettedness for me. I am starting with SMU on the road over Penn State, and I'm basing that on a couple of different things. I am basing it first and foremost on the fact that SMU is being slept on. And I think Clemson fans know that as well as anybody. Clemson did knock off SMU in the ACC championship game in Charlotte, North Carolina, nay, but a couple of weeks ago. But Kevin Jennings and the fellas made it real interesting down the stretch, didn't they? We had John Blau with the Post and Courier who covers Clemson for that broadcast and journalism outlet back on Monday. And we talked a little bit about this game. And the conversation that we had about this game, John Blau said, hey, look, here's the deal. They made a lot of mistakes, SMU did, predominantly in the first half of the competition. They made a lot of mistakes in that game. And I would agree with that. SMU kind of did themselves in, and they did from the very opening drive. They had a couple of bad turnovers early in that game. I thought that the offense from SMU early in that game was very predictable, and more importantly than it being predictable, I thought it was both A, predictable, and B, respectfully, short-sighted. And what I mean by that is you kind of know what the strengths of the Clemson defense are. It's guys like Sammy Brown across the front seven. And I thought SMU made one critical mistake in that game. They just kept running into the teeth of Clemson. Like, they just tried. Sometimes, and this is something that I am, something that I follow quite a bit. Sometimes teams very much want to prove that they are able to do something that is out of their wheelhouse. And I think that that's what happened in that game. I think Rhett Lashley and SMU were trying to establish that, you know, we can come out here. And while we are thought of as a team that behind Kevin Jennings are capable of being a finesse team, throwing the football around the field, and also having KJ get out wide and run the football. You know, we're a gritty, hard-nosed football team. We can run the ball as well. And while I don't necessarily disagree with that, I also think that you got to kind of know your role sometimes. I think you got to know what you are, and I think you got to play to your strength. And what I'd like to think is, and this is something that I think this team has in common with Ohio State, I think sometimes what you want to do has got to fail before you start to lean on and recognize what you should do. Chip Kelly, when I go back to that game against Michigan, and again, while I think the predictability and, quite frankly, failure of Ohio State to beat Michigan is obviously going to fall on Ryan Day, and it makes sense that it would. I also think that some of it has got to fall on Chip Kelly, because I think Ohio State in that game kind of wanted to prove themselves a little bit, and in trying to prove themselves a little bit, I think they kind of walked away from what you knew was going to be possible, right? Now, there are issues for Ohio State. Part of the issue.
Offensive line, which people failed to mention quite a bit, how they've had to keep shuffling their offensive line, and that's a problem.
That is exactly where I was going to start. The offensive line for Ohio State has been, I mean, banged up this year. Like, banged up quite a bit this year. They have had different iterations and rotations across the offensive line. They have got some young dudes that have had to step in without a ton of XP to try to step in front of Will Howard. And that does make it kind of difficult to develop a rhythm for a quarterback that is, I don't want to say bad, because he's not bad, but it's just kind of a dude, right? Like, he's not a guy that you plug into the QB1 spot at Ohio State University and go, there's a game changer, there's a Heisman threat. Will Howard's just fine. He's good enough if they can run the game plan around him. I think the problem is that Chip Kelly was like, let's go out there and ram it right down their throats and do nothing else. And I, to some degree, Lonzo, I kind of understand it, because Ohio State has arguably the best 1-2 tandem of running backs in college football, with Henderson and with Judkins back there. That's about as good of a 1-2 punch. That's not about as good. That is the standard of 1-2 punches in college football this year. So I get wanting to be able to lean on them. But it got to a point where Michigan, who, for all their faults, Michigan's got a real good front seven. This is one of my concerns, because so does Tennessee. Michigan's got a real good front seven. And Michigan, because of the offensive line woes in Columbus, Michigan was looking at that and saying, we're going to take advantage. Michigan was stacking the box. Michigan was bringing extra dudes. Michigan was saying, if you are going to beat us, we're going to make you make Will Howard beat us. And even with them stacking extra in the box and it not working for a lot of football, it was like Chip Kelly was like, no, this is our game plan, and we're not going to do anything else. This is what we are going to do, and we are going to do it all day. The reason that that concerns me for Lonzo's Ohio State Buckeyes is because Tennessee's front seven is probably better than Michigan's. Tennessee's front seven is, if it's not the best front seven in football, it's in the conversation for the best front seven in football. If it's not the best in college football, it's inside the top three. It's better than Michigan's. And Tennessee, on the defensive side of the football, not just likes to play hard nose, they like to play hard nose with extra dudes. They like to bring cornerback and safety blitzes. They like to bring strong and weak side backers off the edge. They like to send an extra guy and exotic looks at your offensive line. So what the blocking scheme is when the ball is snapped is not what the blocking scheme is right after the ball gets into the hands of Will Howard. And if Ohio State is not prepared to deal with that, now here's the good news. Good news is you got like 14 days to prepare for this film and watch game film to see what Tennessee's going to do. You should know what's going to be there. The question is, can you respond and respond when it's not just that it's exotic looks, but respond that it's exotic looks from a fistful of NFL talent that Josh Heupel has put together on the other side of the ball. The reason Ohio State, Tennessee is my second most likely upset is because number one, SMU, I think, learned their lesson against Clemson. And number two, because the Tennessee Volunteers defensive front seven, which is where Michigan beat Ohio State, is better than Michigan's.
All right, so part of the problems that Chip Kelly was doing is he gave up on the middle and kept trying to run to the outside and running the same plays over and over again. You can blame some of that on the offensive line. I think some of it is he froze or something. It was so weird because he's supposed to be an innovator of offense and have all these cool new offensive plays, and he just didn't see it. I just looked up if Ohio State got any of their offensive line back. One of the first articles that pops up is Ohio State seemingly primed to make a change on the offensive line for the playoffs. So they're still shuffling things around. Also, one article says they're about to change their kicker. So things are – if I'm Ohio State, I test that defensive line right away. Even if it cost you a series, just run up the middle and see what they got. To see how your offensive line is going to work and see if you got any push. Because if not, they're going to have to count on Will Howard to win the game. And I don't know if that's the way that they want to do it.
Yeah, well, again, that's what Michigan tried to push you into. And it just – Chip Kelly either didn't believe that Will Howard could do it or didn't want to take the risk. Ohio State has already lost their starting left tackle. They've lost their center, and now reports are that they are going to be changing up their left guard now as well. They're going to be rotating a couple of guards over, so you're going to have a different look than you did even against the Michigan on Rivalry Week a couple of weekends ago. And I think that, again, that's kind of interesting. I think if you are lining up, you have got to go with the absolute best offensive line you can, because Tennessee is going to attack you just like Michigan did. And here's the difference. Here's the difference. If you make mistakes and you go and have a couple of three and outs against Tennessee like you did Michigan, the difference is Tennessee behind Nico can score the rock quick. Michigan can't. Michigan's offense was bad this year. And so when you three and out it against Michigan, you kind of had some forgiveness there because it wasn't like they could turn around and go 70 in three plays. Tennessee can. And Tennessee wants to. And Tennessee can pace the game if you're not able to pick up some first downs on the ground. This one is, I will say this, SMU Penn State's interesting because I do like an upset pick there. But as far as two football teams beating the hell out of each other, Tennessee, Ohio State's the game of the weekend. All right, let's take a break. We'll talk some more college football playoffs when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. All right, let's get to some text on the text line, 71307. Also want to remind you that you can shoot us a message on the Ray Memorial Hotline. That number, or excuse me, that it's not a number. That's on the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Go to the Audacy app And you can leave a message on the Ray Memorial Hotline. Go to the Odyssey app. Go to the Fan Upstate page. On the middle of that page, there is going to be a button that says leave a voice message. You leave a voice message, and we will play them on the show. The Ray Memorial Hotline is open for you now. Text line is 71307. 71307. Start your text with Fan. FAN texter says, Ryan Day's perceived downturn prior to the season parallels with the presence and illegal practices of defensive analyst Connor Stallions. But I guess UM and Harbaugh have wiped their unprecedented cheating practices from the collective minds of college football. Is that a valid argument in defense, great one, of Ryan Day, that, you know, the struggles he's had, not unfair to say there have been some, but point out that they have all come during the Connor Stallions era?
Until this year, for sure. I mean, the only people who forget about that are Michigan people who still believe it never happened, but we know it did. So, no excuses, man. You got to beat Michigan. Even if they are cheating, I mean, you still got to beat them.
Texter says, horse chestnuts don't grow on Rocky Top. I mean, he just typed the words, but I'm assuming he was singing.
Yeah, unfortunately, my X feed is full of Texas people prepping to go, including the picture that I sent you that made me laugh.
Apparently, Tennessee Volunteer fans are spending quite a bit of time in the Waffle Houses of Columbus, Ohio, and there is a scourge of Volunteer fans that are just going into Waffle Houses and playing Rocky Top on repeat.
Well, I sent you a picture of a mulleted person ready to go.
That's Josh Heupel, the head coach of Tennessee.
Oh, was that who that was?
With a chopped on mullet.
Okay. I just look like every Tennessee fan.
We ride north. I got to tell you, I love from a distance. I love from a distance how much Tennessee fans are egging on Buckeye fans.
I wonder if it's working, though. I mean, it's not really affecting me right now, but I wonder in Ohio, I need to call some of the kin and see if they're having to deal with unruly Tennessee people.
I was going to say this for the Blitz, but I'll play it now. The Barstool Ohio State page was doing a press conference on X. Effectively, X, I guess on their live now, you can actually go live with video, not just audio now. And so they were doing a press conference where they had one of the talking heads from the Barstool Ohio State that was on talking about this playoff game. Well, the feed got invaded by Volunteer fans because Tennessee Twitter is elite Twitter. And a cat named Vol Soup said that he wanted to ask a legitimate question of the host of the Barstool Buckeyes press conference. Yeah, you're right. I am.
Okay, well,
I am.
What does that? I mean, I don't get it. Maybe
he was asking if.
No, I got the opioid use.
Yeah.
But I mean, who is he implying uses the opioids?
The Buckeyes, bud. The Buckeyes. The question was: does opioid use of the Ohio folks help them stay warm in the chilly, chilly temperatures of Columbus, Ohio? That's good trolling, is what that is.
I don't think that's funny. I would have thought they could have come with something a little bit better.
That's pretty funny.
I also don't believe the accent. I don't believe that guy's really from Tennessee.
Everything's a work, Delonzo. Can't just have fun.
I've met people from Tennessee, and their accent is better than that.
Up on Rocky Top. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it's hilarious.
I think it was
because
a failed setup radio bit. And
yeah, everything's
a
work.
Yeah, it was not. It was not good. I mean, if you put some work into your bits, who would you say it was? Barstool. Put some work into your bits.
Definitely don't just go have fun on the internet. We can't have that. None of that.
I remember when some of those guys were calling here trying to troll. It was hilarious because they were so bad.
I think as of right now, the Tennessee fans are very much welcoming the Ohio State Buckeye fans into full SEC mode, and it's spectacular. Spectacular. Texas said, Rob, I would love to see SMU get the respect they deserve tomorrow. SMU saw other teams run on Clemson. They thought they could do it. Yeah, no, I think that's I think that was one of my biggest takeaways from the ACC championship game, was that there were some power teams that were capable of running on the Clemson defense. SMU doesn't have power run in the back. They're a finesse team, both through the air and on the ground. In the fourth quarter, when they got back to that, all of a sudden they run up 17 points, tie the ball game, and it's different vibes in Charlotte, North Carolina. Texture said, SMU said, keep running full speed into a concrete wall, the Dan Campbell method. Yeah. I mean, again, like, that was pretty much it. So this is one of those times, I think, that I would say the lesson learned in a loss. It was very fortunate for SMU that the loss didn't cost them a playoff spot, because, again, there were a lot of folks who thought Bama should have gotten the nod over them. I wasn't one of them, but a lot of folks believe that. They are very fortunate that that L did not end up costing them their opportunity to go play in the college football playoff game. It did not, but it came real close. And the fact that they allowed it to come that close kind of could have changed the entire postseason perspective. But it was indeed a good showing there from SMU, in which they learned a lesson that we have got to do what we do. And they did it, and they did it exceptionally well. I think that showed, and I think that on top of that, and maybe more importantly, they learned the lesson, right? They learned the lesson they needed to learn, which is do what we got to do. That is a big part of the reason that I believe that that SMU is the most likely upset in round one of the college football playoffs. Texter said, come on, Rob, are you scared of the F word? And the F word feels left out of this AM. You've said things that would make Howard Stern blush. More profanity and more pornography. I mean, I don't think that's true at all. I don't know if you know this, but I've listened to Howard Stern before. He's kind of been on radio for a very long time. Hey, you know, listen. I think we, I think on this show, I think we tiptoe right up to the edge and we have a little fun dancing around it, and then we come back. You know, we come back. I will say
your
this,
edge and my edge are two
very
different edges.
That is correct. Yeah, they are. But I have never ever said, oh, we're a family friendly show. We're not. I've
so
never
do
said
all family friendly shows do the thing that you just did. I don't, what is that?
You know how when somebody says a bad word and you go, oh, what a potty mouth? This is the opposite version of that. This is the bizarro world of you saying, oh, you have a potty mouth. Yeah, well, we're family friendly, right? It's the opposite. It's the bizarro world version.
So you're saying people who don't do that stuff basically work at Wally World, because that's
just like everybody who drinks a beer is a degenerate who does it at work.
That's not true.
It's the opposite.
It's legal, and if you're an adult of drinking age, then you can do what you want as long as you don't do it in excess to the degree to where you drive home whilst drinking.
Correct.
Or, you know, cause problems at work or at home.
Texas said Jersey Joe is rolling down the highway towards Clinton in the big truck. Jersey Joe, be safe out there on the road, buddy. Thanks for listening.
Texas, why didn't you say Jersey Joe said? You made it sound like it was somebody else. Other
it is
than
Jersey Joe. That's what Texter,
you said. Texter said
oh,
Jersey
sorry.
Joe.
Jersey
said.
Joe. Be safe right on the roads. But I appreciate you listening when you do. Texter said, work is going to be a work today, if you catch my meaning, brother. Oh, we do. We do. We get it. Listen. He said to his manager when the manager said, get some work done. Absolutely not. Let's see. Texter said, upsets, SMU, Tennessee, and the Hoosiers will get boat raced, and the Tigers will get boat raced too.
So that would be no upsets.
No upsets. All talk, says that texter. Texter says, no one, I repeat, no one comes into our house and pushes us around. Go Irish. Says Dan. Dan, appreciate that, buddy. Good to have you checking out the show this morning, man. Welcome to the Armada.
Wow, Dan's like completely against your boy, though. And you ain't taking up for your guy, for Kurt?
No, because I listen, I have made it no secret that I absolutely think that my Hoosiers are going to get slammed in this game. I am dumb, but I am no fool. I think Indiana is up against it if we are keeping it a buck this weekend.
I don't think this will happen, but what if every underdog wins this weekend?
It would be one of the most incredible football weekends of my life, basically, because I don't foresee that being a reality, unfortunately. It'd be super dope if it was, but I ain't putting money on it. I think it's a very chalky weekend to keep it a buck with.
That would be a rough weekend for me because Ryan Day would get fired, Mike Vrabel would get hired, and we'd only win 8 games next year. And then people would be like, why'd we get rid of Ryan
Day? I like Vrabel a lot better at Ohio State than I like him in Chicago with the Bears, by the way.
I don't know. But he's got that everyman kind of gruff thing. That works in Chicago.
It does.
It worked for
Dick. But that's not what I need right now. Listen.
If he goes there, he's got to wear a sweater vest.
Sometimes, like Dan Campbell, it is important to lean into the culture of the city. Sometimes it is important to lean into the team you got. And right now, the team they got needs an offensive guy. Sorry, Chicago. Like, I know you want a, gritty defensive guy. Rah, 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 but, like, you need somebody to teach Caleb Williams how to play quarterback. That's what Carolina did. It's working-ish. Texter said, oh, hell, as a Florida State fan, Georgia should be kicked out of the playoffs because you can't win without your starting quarterback, LOL. I mean, listen, if Georgia...
That's only true if you're in the ACC.
If Georgia didn't win the SEC, 100% I'd hammer on that just to be annoying. Just to be annoying, I'd hammer on that. Texas said, Rob, Denver needs to draft Ashton Janti. They don't have a run game. Yeah, that was their problem last night. Texas said, most likely upset, number one, Clemson over Texas. Number two, Tennessee over Ohio State. Number three, SMU over Penn State. Number four, Indiana over Notre Dame as the least likely. We're not exactly opposite. He says Clemson over Texas because of Wesco, Brenningstool, Williams, and Klubnik. And then he adds in all caps, TJ Parker and Sammy Brown, which I get. Here's my problem. Can I tell you who I don't trust in this game? And it ain't Dabo Swinney, and it ain't Cade Klubnik. Can I tell you who I don't trust in this game? Wes Goodwin, your defensive coordinator. He's a very nice guy. I enjoyed my conversation with him at ACC Media, Clemson Media Days a handful of months ago. Very nice guy. Rooting for him. Very nice guy. But I put a lot of the blame of the South Carolina loss, and I put a lot of the blame for SMU putting up 17 in the fourth quarter and making the ACC title game a game on Wes Goodwin. Because, look, I go back to the SMU game. We've had this conversation a number of times. Explain to me how in the world you ended up in a spot where you decided Sammy Brown, who had been playing electrifying football all through the end of that season, comes off the field for the majority of snaps in the fourth quarter. And would you look at that? Coincidence? I think not. All of the sudden, that guy who gets taken out of the game late, then all of a sudden SMU starts racking up points and makes that game a hell of a lot closer than it had any need to be. Like, you're going to have to explain to me why all of a sudden, after all the success that you had at that point, you're going to have to explain to me why all of a sudden switching to a very soft zone was the right move, because I don't get it. And I am concerned in this spot that if you end up in that spot again, Wes Goodwin does the same thing again. You change up into the defense, you start playing soft, and all of a sudden, Quinn Ewers just takes off on you. I'm nervous that happens. Texas said, Florida State fans have become the whiniest fan base in football. Hope they lose all their games forever. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's been fun to me. Because of texts like that, listening to South Carolina fans, we got left out of the playoffs. No, you didn't. You lost 3 games. Florida State didn't lose a single one. I don't want to hear it. If you're asking me what group of fan bases is whinier, I'm going to say right now, you know what the system was. South Carolina fans have been whinier than Florida State fans because Florida State fans at least had an argument to lean on. Sorry. Like, this is one of those spots where I got to say, I support you, but I'm calling it a spade to everybody. Texter said, Rob, Clemson has nothing to lose except a shopping day before Christmas. I got to tell you, that's fair. You got to wonder if Clemson plays a little reckless, a little aggressive, right? They're a 12-point dog. Who cares? Go out there, do things. Texter said, never before heard a better description of Tennessee fans than Scourge. That should be their official name, like a flock of birds and a school of fish, a scourge of volunteers. Okay, that's actually pretty funny. That's actually pretty funny. You know what's not funny? You know what's very serious? You know what is like Murrow award-winning levels of serious? Lonzo's sports flashes.
A more deserving team than Florida State, who is going to the playoffs, Georgia, is going to be without their quarterback, Carson Beck. Backup Gunnar Stockton is expected to make, Gunnar Stockton that is, expected to make his first start in the Sugar Bowl on January 1st when the Dogs face the winner of Notre Dame and Indiana in round two. Florida State fans are whinier, by the way. Second player in a week has been signed by Clemson out of the transfer portal. This time it's Purdue defensive end Will Helt. According to Adam Schefter, Helt is ranked as the number 3 defensive end in the transfer portal by ESPN. Hey, make sure you tune in tomorrow at 2:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Harvard Crimson. It's Furman versus Harvard right here on your home for Furman Paladins basketball. The Fan, Upstate. Whiner's going to whine, yo.